doctor came in to see his patient and said, "I have good news and bad news. Which one do you want first?" Patient said, "Okay, give me the bad news first." Doctor said, "Your operation is going to cost a lot more than we expected." The patient said, "Wow, that's terrible. So what's the good news?" Doctor said, "I'm going to be able to buy a new Mercedes." What's good news for one is often bad news for another. The good news that your team is going to the Super Bowl is bad news for my team who is going home. The good news that your candidate won the election is bad news for me because mine lost. The good news that some are getting a tax break is bad news for those who will bear the burden. Life often feels like a zero-sum game. One person's gain is another person's loss. This is the way of the world, and it is the hard truth that Jesus confronted when he went to preach in his hometown of Nazareth. He opened up the scripture for the day from Isaiah and proclaimed, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor." And when the people heard the good news, they were filled with rage, drove Jesus out of town, and tried to throw him off a cliff. This makes me think about Bon Jovi. You know, Bon Jovi has a song entitled, "Who Says You Can't Go Home?" Well, Mr. Jovi, the answer to your question is Jesus. Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, no prophet is accepted in their hometown." And it's a miracle that anybody ever attempted to preach the good news after what happened to Jesus that day in Nazareth. Not much has changed since the days of Jesus, has it? Today, when the good news is preached for real, people still get stressed out and respond with anger, alienation, and aggression. It's a conundrum. Is the problem that the good news isn't really good? Or is it that it is only good news to some and bad news to others? Or is it truly good news, but the hearers simply aren't in the mood to receive it? Why is it so hard for us to receive the good news? Maybe it's because we're so used to bad news. Our world is filled with bad news. War and starvation in Yemen. Refugee camps in Syria. Apartheid in Palestine. Turmoil in Venezuela. A humanitarian crisis on our border. Investigations of corruption in Washington. Division in our society. Violence in the streets. Another mass shooting. 800,000 government employees on furlough as a result of gridlock between wealthy elite in both parties. There's not any more bad news today than there ever has been in the past, but what has changed is that bad news is constantly in our face, on our screens, in our minds. The American Psychological Association released a report in November entitled "Stress in America." They found that 2/3 of Americans now feel that the future of the nation is a very significant source of their personal stress, more than money and work, for the first time in American history. 60% of Americans said they consider this the lowest point in United States history that they can remember, which includes people who lived through World War II, Vietnam, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and 9/11. The APA's chief executive, Dr. Arthur Evans, was so stunned by the results, he said, "We are now at the highest level of stress in our history. It is on the level of a public health crisis, and it is affecting the well-being of the majority of the population." People in this study, intriguingly, also indicated that they feel conflicted between their desire to stay informed and their knowledge that the news is the source of their stress. Half of Americans said the news is causing them so much stress that is resulting in overwhelming anxiety, fatigue, and loss of sleep. And yet, 1 in 10 of those same adults say that they check the news every hour. And 20% report constantly monitoring social media, which exposes us to the latest headlines, whether we like it or not. We are literally stressing ourselves out with bad news, deteriorating our health. And so what are we doing to take responsibility for relieving our own strengths. It's time to do an inventory. Are we unplugging ourselves from social media and the internet? Are we turning off the TV and the news? Are we going for walks in the woods? Are we praying and meditating? Are we finding times in our lives for stillness and silence? Or are we blaming someone else for our stress? And then coming to church and saying, "You better tell me the good news and make my stress go away." You don't need me to tell you the good news. Our culture is so desperate for good news that many of the traditional news outlets have now started their own good news networks like Fox and MSNBC and Huffington Post. Good news editions of their bad news. There's even now a good news network that only reports what they define as good news. Of course, yes, it is mostly pictures of people with their cats and dogs. But there are also stories like this. Texas church pays off the lunch debts of an entire school district with their Christmas offering. Aldi's celebrates a record-breaking year by giving their employees a raise above a living wage. This is my favorite one. Natural Light Beer apologizes for hangovers in college by paying off millions of student loan debt. Major League Baseball pitcher donates a $10 million estate to bring joy to special needs kids. Baptist Church in Alabama hands out $16,000 to hundreds of furloughed federal workers. What's the definition of good news? Jesus wasn't the first person to use that term. The word for good news in Greek is evangelion, which means gospel. And it's where the term evangelical comes from, believe it or not. Prior to Jesus, evangelion was an important phrase in Roman society that was used to announce the birth of a new Caesar. And the most famous pre-Christian use of the word evangelion is the Priene calendar inscription from 9 BC, which was discovered on the Temple of Athena in Asia Minor. The inscription is an empire-wide announcement that the lunar year will be changed to the Julian calendar to mark the birth of Augustus Caesar and herald the new era in history that had come. And it says this exact quote, "The birthday of Augustus Caesar, the son of God, the beginning of the good news." In Jesus' day, everybody thought the good news was about Caesar, which is why it's so radical when Matthew and Mark and Luke come along and use the exact same word, evangelion, and say, "You heard it said that Caesar is the good news for the world, but we say the beginning of the gospel, the good news, is the birth of Jesus Christ, Son of God." They stole the words right out of the empire's mouth. They reappropriated the empire slogan and applied it to Jesus. And just by using that Roman phrase, they were proclaiming that Jesus and the kingdom were the real good news. And Caesar, sorry to say, and his empire were not. I wonder if any of the gospel writers thought that their good news might stress some people out. When Jesus brought the good news to Nazareth, it definitely stressed people out. But the incredible thing is that Jesus didn't say, "I am the good news." He could have, I guess. He said, "The Spirit has anointed me to bring, to offer good news." And not just to anybody, but to a specific group of people, to the poor. And this is what so many Christian evangelists and evangelicals throughout history have neglected about Jesus' words. They say they follow Jesus and preach good news, but they forget the end of the sentence. Jesus ended his sentence with, "for the poor." So if we really want to follow Jesus and bring good news, we have to finish the sentence. The good news must be good news for the poor, or it's not good news. It might be news. It might even be good for some, but it's not good news for the poor, then it's not the good news and it's not the gospel. The good news of Jesus and the kingdom is not like the good news of Caesar and the empire, because the gospel is always for the poor. Some of the most disastrous things that have ever happened in human history have occurred because the followers of Jesus have mixed up the bad news of the world with the good news of Jesus. The gospel of wealth and prosperity, for instance, is not good news for the poor. A gospel that is only about getting to heaven and not about life here on earth is not good news for the poor. A gospel that saves people's souls but does nothing for their bodies or their material life is not good news for the poor. A gospel that separates grace from truth or love from justice is not good news for the poor. A gospel that offers charity but cannot create economic mobility is not good news for the poor. A gospel that claims that the poor are lazy is certainly not good news for the poor. A gospel that only talks about personal responsibility and ignores the systems of oppression in our world is not good news for the poor. What is good news for the poor? Jesus proclaimed that it was release, recovery, freedom, healing, liberation. Now, you might think the hometown crowd got stressed out and angry with Jesus because they were rich and well-to-do and didn't want to hear good news for the poor. But if you look closely, they loved that part of Jesus' manifesto. Nazareth, you'll remember, was a ghetto town, and the poor people there were amazed at the gracious words that came from Jesus' mouth. The good news that he was preaching to them was good news for them. And we are told that all spoke well of him. Their response was a preacher's dream. When did that ever happen? If only Jesus had stopped there and cut his sermon short. I try to remember this. When people tell you to keep it short in the pulpit, they're trying to protect you from the crowds. But Jesus wasn't done. He continued, "Doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, 'Doctor, cure yourself.' And do also here in your hometown the things that we heard you did in Capernaum." The proverb, "Doctor, cure yourself," was a saying that was used in those days to convey that it was the duty and responsibility of any doctor or healer or liberator to treat their family and friends first and foremost, ahead of and before of and even to the exclusion of all other people. The problem in Nazareth wasn't that the people didn't like the good news or thought that it was bad news. The problem is that they wanted the good news all to themselves. Why shouldn't they? They were Jesus' family. It was his hometown. They were his people. It was his home church. But Jesus said, no, look, this good news is not only for the poor here in Nazareth. It's good news for the poor everywhere, for the widows and the lepers in Zarephath and in Sidon and in Syria and in Samaria. Jesus said, the good news cannot settle down and stay here in this one synagogue town. The good news must be on the move out in the world, healing the sick, giving life to those in despair, providing hope for the brokenhearted, freeing the oppressed from the bonds of injustice, offering honor to the dishonored, compassion to the mistreated, community, fellowship, love to those on the margins. But the congregation said, "What are you going to do for us? Don't turn your back on your own people. If it's not just for us, actually, if it's for all those other people too, we don't really want any part of your good news." And they kicked Jesus and his good news out of town. But Jesus didn't scold them or curse them, saying, "Woe to you, Nazareth." He simply passed through and went on his way. The people of Nazareth would have seen it coming if they'd paid closer attention to his proclamation. Jesus quoted, you'll remember, word for word, almost, from Isaiah 61. But there's one small part of verse 2 that he left out. Jesus stopped short right before Isaiah proclaimed that it will be a day of vengeance for God. You see, Jesus brings good news for the poor, but he does not bring vengeance with him. He leaves all of that stuff behind, actually. All the malice and the wrath, all the judgment and retaliation, all the anger and punishment and revenge and shame, Jesus leaves all that behind. The good news of Jesus comes with liberation and healing and restoration and release for the poor, but it does not come with shame for the rich. No, it is free from all retribution for those who may have missed the mark. It offers no damnation for those who want to keep it all for themselves. It pronounces no penalty for those who reject it. It brings good news for the poor and nothing more. If it is received as bad news, it simply passes through, knocks the dust off its feet and goes on its way to the next town to find those who are desperately longing to receive the good news of love and liberation, healing and release. There is someone who wants to hear that good news. Like Jesus, we are sent forth from this place to be evangelists, to bring good news to the poor. And we must remember, the gospel is not the gospel unless it is good news for the poor. But it's also not the gospel if it is nothing but judgment for the rich. Rich and poor, our liberation and healing are tied together. As Dr. King said, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, woven together in a single garment of destiny. We need one another to build this new world that Jesus has proclaimed. The kingdom is not a zero-sum game. Good news for one does not have to be bad news for another. Jesus did not announce the dawning of an empire of scarcity, but a kingdom of abundance. Therefore, let us go from this place in peace, passing through all the stress of the bad news in our world, offering no judgment to those who want to exclude us, or drive us to the edge, or seek to do us harm. Instead, may we walk into the world like Jesus, with good news for the poor in one hand, and grace for the rich in the other, and look to see what God might do. Amen.